Hello everyone, and welcome to Charlotte View. I'm your presenter Daniel, and I'm here with your host Claudia Pareco. Every week, we feature innovative, wholehearted, and inspiring thought leaders and businesses. Throughout our higher-ranked shows, you and your loved ones will experience an influx of eye-opening information, profound inspiration, compassionate counseling, advanced spirituality, pertinent advice, and loving guidance. Just tune in, live or on demand, and share, share, share. Our shows are held on Mondays and Fridays at 12 p.m. Eastern U.S. Time, 9 a.m. Pacific. At any moment to participate on our shows, please call 805-830-8344 and press 1 to talk with the host. Charlotte View provides the platform to a diverse array of guests, national and international, authors, musicians, nonprofits, social workers, psychics, healers, small businesses, retreats, you name it, who are joining forces to change the world from inside out, from their areas of expertise. If you have something to say, we have the audience for it. All interviews are easily found in all social media and are available free, on demand, for anyone who wishes to further their knowledge and to transform their lives. Host the show and get your name in the game referred as podcasting. Lead with Charlotte View on new media content revolution that is empowering individuals like you with the ability to globally distribute their ideas and create a following of like-minded fans. To request a show, please write to info@charlotteview.net or visit our website, charlotteview.net. Now, enjoy the episode of the day.
If not us, who? If not now, when? Racial issues are America's most intractable problem, but they can be largely solved in one generation. Today, we have Roberta Grimes, who is going to talk about her latest book on the FUN series, The FUN of Living Together. In today's episode, Roberta is going to tell us a series of proposing ideas that can give us a fresh approach to solving our racial problems. Let's bring Roberta to the show so she can start away with this controversial but fun topic. Welcome, Roberta, to Charlotte View.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you for such a lovely introduction.
I just love those words that you use. So if anyone wants to have their hands on your book, the best way is to go to Roberta's website, www.robertagrimes.com. And Grimes is spelled Grimes.com. So, Roberta, we have had you for all your fun books, and this to me is the one book that is quite different from the others, but yet it makes sense that you are also tackling this topic.
Well, here's the thing. Most of my life, I've been, really for half a century, I've been researching what happens at and after death. When you do that, and you actually are in contact with people we used to think were dead, you learn what the purpose of life is. And the purpose of life is to learn and grow spiritually. And when you pursue that, what you come to understand is that consciousness is a spectrum. The highest vibration is love, the lowest vibration is fear. And when you come to understand that, you realize that our central problem as a species is that we think from fear. We don't think from love. When you think from fear, you get the mess that we have right now in America. When you are only thinking from love, you can solve every problem. And this is the first and most important one to tackle. But it really isn't a natural, as you say, it's in a natural progression from what my other fun books are about.
So why don't we go a little bit to how did you came up with the idea of writing this and tackle this problem, if per se, in America, which, you know, just last week at the UN, in Geneva, a UN committee tasked with combating racism has issued a formal early warning over conditions in the United States. This is a very rare move, which is usually only used when there's a looming civil conflict. And this was just after what happened in Charlottesville. So it makes you think how important the topic is and how current.
Yeah, it's for the people who are the victims of our problem, it's always current, of course, but now it's on everybody's radar screen. What got me started is that I have a very dear friend. She's been my friend for, at least a decade, that we go out to lunch with on occasion. And like everybody else with darker skin who has a friend with light skin, she's never brought up the topic, and it's never been on my radar screen. Most white people have no idea what the problem is, and we don't even realize how big a problem it is. We're clueless. But I had some random question. We'd never talked about this for a decade. I had a random question for her one day last summer, and she did something which she later told me she probably wouldn't have done if we were not such close friends. She answered it honestly. And when we started talking about it, and it's like you tug a string, and suddenly there's a whole world of information that opens up to you. And so I got really involved in researching this problem and talking with her about it. And we became so involved in talking with her about it. I had her last winter, I think it was early December, I had her as a guest on my radio program, Seek Reality. And at the end of that call, I realized she again was very honest on that call. Now, I have to just say parenthetically that Kelly Glover is upper middle class. If it weren't for skin color, knowing her history and knowing my history, you would assume she somehow ranks above me in America's class system. Her father has a PhD. You know, she's got a bigger, better education than I have. But hearing how her life is still constrained just by skin color made me angry. And beginning to better understand what's going on in America made me so energized that when we stopped that conversation, before we even rang off, I said to her, "Look, this is a book. Are you game? Because I can't write it without you." She said, "I'm game." And let's just say the book wrote itself within a few weeks, which is what seems to happen with my fun books when they're ready to come. They're like a birth. They come very quickly. So it was published by February, and I couldn't have written it without her, but I also did a great deal of research, and this is the kind of problem that you ignore because you don't even see it as a problem, and then once you do the research, you see things you will never be able to unsee again. This is the issue for the rest of my life. It has to be fixed, and it has to be fixed as soon as possible, because the harm we are doing every day, just without even knowing it, is horrendous. Nothing people believe about race is right. I should just say that parenthetically. The only way to really understand race is to forget everything you thought you knew about it and start over, because all of our assumptions are wrong.
And, you know, you're so right about that, Roberta. When, as you know, I'm not originally from the United States. I'm from Mexico, and I never, ever understood why there was still such an issue. For me, it was ancient history. It was like, well, that happened so many years ago. That is over, gone, kaput. Why are they still having the same types of conversations? Until I sat in a room and there were white Americans and black Americans, and they told their own stories. And then I heard how all of these issues was still part of their agenda today. So So it made me realize that this is not something that you just write on the history books and then you find it in the end and close the book and let's move on.
No, you're right about that, and there's a very important reason why it's so immediate. I mean, just to give you a flavor of how immediate it is, all other races mingle pretty well in America, including people who have lately come from Africa and still have an accent. The only problem that exists in America is between white Americans and people descended from slavery in America. That's the racial divide. It's a unique issue. It isn't race that's the problem. The real problem, the core problem, is that America has never ended slavery. It still exists in America, and it deeply affects about a third of African Americans to this day. It somewhat affects much more than half. My guess is two-thirds are at least somewhat affected. A third are still living as if slavery existed because we never ended slavery in America. We're living in the third stage of it, and it's got to be the last stage. We've got to end it now because it will not get better on its own. This is something we have to do proactively, or it will never, ever end. But the good news is that once we end it, there will be no more race issue. Racism is not inherent to people. What's inherent to people is tribalism. And what we stupidly do is we teach our children when they're too young to fight the lie. We teach our children that they belong to a tribe that is the only tribe they belong to. The fact is, if everyone in America belongs to the American tribe, which includes all colors, when we start teaching our children that before the age of 6, we'll never have any more racism in this country of any kind. That's one of the things we must begin to do. Another of the things we've got to do is we've got to end slavery. That's an imperative. It will not get better on its own, ever.
How do you mean slavery is still part of our times? In which ways do you refer?
Well, here's the problem. Slavery does something to the human mind. We are all very susceptible to it because all over the earth, slavery has been a very dominant human institution for millennia of time. When Thomas Jefferson wrote those deathless words, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal," at the moment he was writing those words, it has been estimated that 3/4 of the planet was being held in slavery. That it's just a normal human institution, and we hopefully have outgrown it on a conscious level, although it still exists, frankly, in a number of countries, every bit as blatantly as it ever has existed anywhere. But the point is this: because it has been so prominent, all of us have the capacity to endure it and to make a life with it. It's sort of like if you think about traffic laws. You obey the traffic laws, you don't think about it. And it doesn't occur to you that you should try to get outside traffic laws or outside any other kind of laws. Well, that's what slavery does to the mind. It makes that kind of box, but the box is much smaller for someone who has always lived in slavery. People have to be emancipated from slavery mind. Now, many people in this country have emancipated themselves or their ancestors have, which is why we have so many successful African Americans. But there are many people are descended from people who continuously have lived with slavery mind, and it constrains them. My co-author Kelly Glover tells me that people upper class and upper middle class black people talk about it when they go out to dinner. You know, what's wrong with these people? What's wrong with them is that they still live in slavery, and we never ended it after the Civil War. I think we couldn't because of we freed the slaves in such a wrong way that we destroyed the South, we destroyed that culture, we destroyed the North. We basically made a mess of things, and in that mess, there was just no, because it was done through a war, there was just no way to finish emancipation, so we didn't do anything for the slaves. We did no emancipation. So immediately they were re-enslaved. We call it the Jim Crow period. It went on for almost 100 years. But the people living as in the South, who were descended from slaves, were still living as slaves. They had a slightly different set of rules that they had to follow, but they followed those rules. If that had been the case, if it had been the case that they were free, they would have risen, which they didn't really do. because they were slaves. As I say, it does something to the mind. Sometimes I think we ought to study what it does, but I'd rather just get rid of it forever, which is what we can do. We have the power to do that. But the problem was that when we should have ended that second stage of slavery really was 1965. Dr. King, who was the greatest American of the 20th century by far, did manage to end that second stage of slavery. He got the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which ended the second stage of slavery, and he was in the process of completing emancipation. But then the federal government reinstituted slavery, and it did that with the War on Poverty, which, of course, did not move the needle on poverty at all. But what it did, because these people never had been emancipated, what it did was to reinstate slavery by breaking up a very healthy African-American culture and society. And anyone who thinks this isn't possible, it's easy to see what happened, because the men living during the black men living in the South during the Jim Crow period were hated, despised, and feared, as well they might have been, because they should have risen, but they didn't, and the white people didn't know why they weren't rising. They didn't understand about slavery mind. And so they didn't expect kindness. They didn't see the sudden offer to pay women who didn't have husbands and fathers as a kindness. They saw it as an order. If you can't feed your family, you must give them to the federal government or the children will not survive. So during the very few years after 1965, it appears that nearly all of the men still living in the South who were descended from slavery gave up their families. Not anything anyone should ever be asked to do, and certainly not anything they wanted to do. And we know that they didn't want to do it because of how well they handled the whole hell of Jim Crow. And ever since 1965, the statistics are appalling, and they get worse and worse. And all this in this pathology that we inflicted on African Americans with the War on Poverty is now affecting all Americans. I mean, we've got to stop it. I talk a lot more about this in my book, but it's so plain to see that what happened, and it is not the fault of a single person with darker skin. It is 100% the fault of the federal government, which started a misguided program and then never, ever looked at what its program was doing to the people it was supposed to help. I'm sorry, I get wound up when I talk about this. You probably want to jump in and say something, right?
No. It's okay, because... there's nothing I can add to that. So you propose a change that we can do today, and in a generation we could end with this situation. But how do you get people to actually want to do this? Because you talk about the slave mentality. There's also this master mentality of the other group, where that is the problem now, is that there are still some very strong people that defend both options with their lives, and they don't see it as something wrong. They see it as part of what America should be. So how do you fit those, or how do you change that mentality?
Well, I would disagree that people want this. Not a single human being wants what we have now. Here's our problem. We teach racism to America's children. We're doing it to this day. There's a period of our lives, and it goes up to the age of between 5 and 6, when we are in download mode. And they can tell us by our brainwaves. We're just learning uncritically what's true about our reality. We're learning what reality is, who we are, who our family is, and who our tribe is. And what we do now in America, misguidedly, is we rear children with only up to the age of, school age, we rear children only with people who look like them. So we are teaching our children that their tribe is people who look like them and nobody else. That's a lie, and it's a very damaging lie. Every person, and I would disagree that people want to be masters. I live in Texas, which is a third black, a third white, and a third Hispanic. And people live here very happily and comfortable. My next door neighbors are very successful people descended from. I think they have a slight accent, so they're not very far from Mexico. But they're, you know, we live in a very prosperous neighborhood, and that's our next door neighbors. People live mixed in Texas, and nobody wants anything but to continue to live mixed in Texas. But well, the problem is this: when you rear white children and you teach them that their tribe is white, then they get to school and out into the world and they find there are other people who also think they're American, but they look different. They are fearful of strangers who look different their entire lives. And that is the entire source of this, you know, white supremacist notion. I feel sorry for these people. They were taught a lie when they were too little to question it. And so they're afraid of people who don't look like them. But it isn't that people want to be dominant, it's that they're afraid. It's all based in fear. That's why I say the only way we can start living is by thinking only from love. The problem with doing it to black children is that they grow up and then they feel inferior. I'm told by my friend Kelly that many African Americans struggle with a sense of inferiority for their whole lives, which is a tragic thing to do to children. But if we never again rear an American child to believe the lie that only people who look like that child are part of that child's tribe, if we instead make sure that they have some time to play with children who look different, never again will you have this kind of problem. I mean, my grandchildren in Texas all went to mixed preschools. My oldest granddaughter's first best friend was black. I mean, kids are not racist by nature. Nobody is racist by nature. We teach it to our children, which is really, really stupid.
Yeah, it is. But I'm thinking on when they try to mix the people and put them in in percentages, they try to put in the same school kids from different backgrounds, and it backfired. It backfired.
You know why? They did it with little. They did it with teenagers. I remember it busting. I mean, that was really stupid. The way you do it is to explain to Americans, no one's ever done, that in order to make America move past race, we have to make it so our children don't. Nobody wants to make their child grow up to be a racist. It's easy. Just have a few, you know, meetups where the parents and the children get together and the children get to play for a bit. You don't even have to integrate their preschools. All you have to do is encourage people to help their children get past this nonsense of race, because it's easy to do. It's so easy. What if the tragedies of America is that we keep living this same circle of futility, which we've been living since 1965? That's when it really became bad. Before that, it was not. But the turn that the worst thing this nation ever has done was the war on poverty. I mean, I could talk to you for a day about how it was the worst thing we've ever done. And we have a lot of things we've done that were bad. The worst thing was the war on poverty. And from that, we have a lot of lessons to learn. But people don't want what we have. What?
For people that do not know what the war on poverty is, can you just briefly explain us what that is?
In 1965, the federal government, it was Lyndon Johnson who spearheaded this. He was the president at the time. And I'm not even going to get into reasons why he might have done it, which might not be flattering to the man, because I don't think that's beside the point. But he began to pay, his program, among other things, began to pay poor women who didn't have a husband and father for their children, give them money instead. This is the source of our modern welfare system. And but it required that they not have husbands and fathers in the home. No effort that I've noticed has ever been made to help people out of poverty. This actually cemented poverty at a very high level in the black community, because it's demonstrable that that intact families get out of poverty much more easily than do, you know, families headed by just a mother. The poverty rate among African American children to this day is 1/3. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's horrible. And a third of, see, it's this third, this sort of hard number of 1/3 that is most most troubling, because these people have been living still in racism. It's the third stage of racism. I mean, the third stage, rather, of slavery. I mean, slavery without bullwhips but with flat screen TVs is still slavery if people cannot get out of it and cannot enter the American mainstream, and they can't. One of the problems we have is that even though more than 60 years ago, the Supreme Court declared in Brown versus Board of Education that it's unconstitutional to segregate our schools. Our schools are more segregated than they've ever been. And black children get such an inferior education that many of them can't even do high school work. By the time they get to high school, their educations are totally screwed up. I mean, education is the key to fixing this. It's the key to ending slavery finally, and it's the key to making everybody comfortable with integration, which people want. And I would urge anyone who thinks people don't want it to just come to Texas. I mean, white, black, and Hispanic live very comfortably mixed in Texas. We just saw what happened in Houston. I mean, that's how Texas is. We don't live in separate communities. We don't go to segregated schools. We don't do anything like that. This is how America will look in, you know, 30, 40 years, is the way Texas looks now. And we're all comfortable with it.
No, I agree with you that that living in harmony and with everybody, that should be the way that is, the way, the ultimate dream of every human being. And that I agree with you. This topic has been talked by so many, and they have been trying to find a way to jump from when we are to there. You're talking about education. Well, yes, there is education available for everybody. Like, there's schools for everybody. Yeah, I agree with you that some schools are better than others, but still you have access to school and to achieve whatever you want if you want. Now,
that's not true. I'm sorry. I wish that were true.
Think,
I believed it
you
too.
You think you don't?
No, not at all. What has happened is that people, I would say most Americans, believe that there is an intellectual difference between black and white, that black people on a range are just not as smart. That's not true. There are books about it, too. The problem is this. There has never been a moment in the United States of America when we have ever given black children an adequate education across the board. The only ones now who get a decent education are the ones who go to mixed schools. Most of them don't get to go to mixed schools. And starting right from kindergarten, the schools that are primarily African American are vastly inferior. I'm going to give you one little example of what's going on, but it's going on all over the country. It's called the soft bigotry of low expectations. It's not soft. It is straight-up racism. The most racist institution by far that we have in America is the public school system. For example, there are 5 high schools in Baltimore, Maryland, that were recently given a standardized test of the sort that they give them all over the country, give children, young people. Not one student in those 5 high schools, which were African-American high schools, scored as proficient in math or in English. You had to get a 4 or a 5 to be proficient. Most of these students got a 1. They got a 1. They were not even prepared for high school. That's the only explanation, because it wasn't spending. They were spending. The spending in those schools was 4th highest in the country. It wasn't the fault of the teachers either. They couldn't teach students who were not prepared for high school. Beginning in kindergarten, because they were going to African-American schools, these kids were given a deliberately inferior education. I think the reason is because everyone assumes they're just not as smart and no one wants to make them feel bad about that. I have no idea what the reason is. But we've got to stop it this minute. They're poor children. They need a better education in order to get out of poverty. But the reason I say slavery continues is that this 1/3 of Americans, and I think it actually affects more than half of African Americans, but 1/3 of African Americans are still living on the edge of society. They cannot enter the mainstream because they are hopelessly undereducated. And that's why we have all the social problems we have in the African American community. Because before 1965, believe it or not, they were actually a healthier community, and they had a healthier, higher rate of intact families than white people. It all was caused by the war on poverty that broke up those families because the men were not given a choice. They were made to leave their families. And because they were in slavery mind, they didn't fight it as you or I would fight it.
So they left their homes so the mothers would get the government benefit that they were offering.
When they lost, see, here part of the problem was that the civil rights movement was breaking up the master-slave relationship in the South. It still existed into the 1960s. I mean, these men, although they were able to live separate and they were model husbands and fathers, they supported their families as best they could during all that time. They were not free, and when they left their communities, they had to play slave, and they did, because they were still thinking that way. So when the war on poverty came along, they were in a transitional period since the master-slave relationship was breaking up, and frankly, the people in the South were still enraged. The whole problem was the Civil War. What a stupid thing that was for us to do. We should have ended slavery peacefully. We talk in our book about one of the many ways we could have ended slavery peacefully in the early part of the 19th century, and of course nothing like that was tried. We instead did the worst possible thing with this war that made it impossible for us ever to finish emancipation at that time. But you know, so these people, because they were still in slavery mind, when they suddenly were not able to find a job, and that was happening right at the same time because of the success of the civil rights movement, they couldn't feed their families. And they had an order: if you cannot feed your family, an order from the master. If you can't feed your family, you must give your family to the federal government or your children won't survive. That's how they heard what the government was doing. And they obeyed. They didn't think they had a choice. No, they had never known kindness from white people. These men were treated abominably during slavery, and just even worse, actually, in some ways, during the Jim Crow period. They didn't expect or recognize a kindness if they saw one. And it wasn't kind anyway. I mean, telling a woman, if you get rid of your husband, we'll give you money. There's a great clip, which you can find on the Internet, of Bobby Kennedy, who, of course, his the reason that Lyndon Johnson became president was that Bobby's brother, Jack Kennedy, had been assassinated as president, and Bobby Kennedy, shortly before he himself was killed, he was running for president. There's a clip of him saying, "They might have wanted husbands, they might have wanted fathers, but we give them a check." And he sums it up very well, and that he said that only months before he was killed in 1968. I mean, we did a horrendous thing with the war on poverty. We did a despicable thing with the war on poverty. Not so much even, I mean, you can try things socially if you want to, but then not to notice that we were breaking up most of the African-American families in the entire South. We have never cared about black people enough. We've never paid attention to the fact that they are citizens, and they're 13% of the population, and at least 10% of the American population is still being kept down today. That makes no sense. That makes us a poorer country, not allowing them to enter the mainstream. It's insane what we're doing.
Yeah, and thinking about that, it makes me think that it was done on purpose. So the families would get destroyed, and, you know, because if you destroy the families, which is the center of the lives of people and the power and your sense of self-power, well, you would not get those people to fight against the system because they would feel powerless.
Yeah, what you just said is very true, and I don't dare say it myself. Understand something important about Lyndon Johnson. He was born in the early part of the 20th century, living at the same time, and probably in his family, were people still outraged by the Civil War. Mm-hmm. There are people to this day in the South who refer to it as the War of Northern Aggression, which is what it was. We think of it as a heroic thing that the North did. What the North did was trash the possibility of ending slavery peacefully. I mean, it was just a stupid thing to do, to invade the South and destroy it as we did. I mean, it caused, I think, a lot of the worst part of the Jim Crow period was misplaced anger, misplaced rage among these Southerners for what the North had done. They couldn't get at the Northerners, so they took it out on the people that had been abandoned in the South, the former slaves. I mean, there is no justification for the Civil War and for the way we did things. And then for the fact that we abandoned the newly freed slaves and didn't even attempt to emancipate them and make them safe. I mean, what a horrible thing we did. There's nothing noble about it at all. I mean, that's what bothers me about their tearing down Civil War monuments. Well, at least these people were fighting for a cause that made sense to them. They were trying to protect their part of the country. In the North, since they didn't emancipate the slaves and they left things in this mess, I can't feel what they did was honorable at all.
Well, no, I haven't thought of things like that, and yeah, because to this, I remember conversations here in North Carolina with people talking about race and how to bridge between the different groups, in particular in Charlotte. One of the things that I remember hearing from most of the black women in the group, they were really saddened because their men they still leave their homes. And I didn't know why. I didn't know why most of their men had just left their homes and gone. And some of them had got into trouble. But the thing is that most of the women were single. Not single, they were, well, not even divorced. They were left by their men, and the children were left by their parents. And I didn't know there was a story or a history about that, that I don't know if that the government is not still paying these families, are they, today?
I understand. Here's the problem. What we did with the war on poverty was we threw away African-American men. Most African-Americans still lived in the South at the time, in 1965. And I don't know what the exact percentage is, but it looks to me as if close to all of those families broke up. And we basically threw away the men because the only role they had was they were excellent husbands, fathers, providers, and protectors of their families. They had no role then. We're in the process of throwing away the third and fourth generation of African-American men in this country. If they cannot do elite sports, if they're not elite at entertainment, unless they are descended from people who managed to free themselves by getting north before the war on poverty started, they're pretty much, they don't have a role. That's why so many of them go to prison. That's why they abandon their families. We did that. It's not their fault. And there is a way to fix it. But here's the real problem. And when my kids were very small, we had wonderful neighbors, the Gregory family, Dick Gregory and his family. And he was the one who gave me this insight. We created a label with the war on poverty that now is worn by every African-American who's not, you know, famous, beloved, in some way important. Every other African-American wears that label, and the label is what Dick called it, a brand X label. And people, therefore, we really don't see African-Americans as equal. I mean, they get a horrible education. Most of them grow up without fathers, and most of them grow up in poverty. So we don't see them as equal. But this is something that the war on poverty created, this brand X label. And the only way to get rid of it is to rear the first fully emancipated generation of African-Americans with an elite label on their forehead. They've got to get an elite education. Our school system has horribly failed them, and the war on poverty has given them this awful label. So when we give each African-American child born over an entire generation an elite education at the very best schools, And when we and clearly then none of them will wear that label, and all of them will feel invested in America. America has rejected them. It's not their fault. It's the reason that they abandon their families is that that's what we required them to do, and we have never made a different requirement for them. We've never given them any encouragement to be part of America. We've never invited them into the mainstream. We've always assumed, well, they would know better. I mean, they should know how to do it. This is not the fault of a single person with darker skin. It is 100% the fault of the war on poverty and what it did to their community, period. End of stop. And here's the problem. Even people who don't care about black people, all the pathologies that we have inflicted on that community, and I didn't finish something I said before. Lyndon Johnson grew up, I think he was born in 06 or something. He grew up hearing the stories about the war, and he grew up lived in the Jim Crow period. That was his life as a white person. There are quotes and I didn't even use the worst quotes. There are quotes from Lyndon Johnson in The Fun of Living Together that literally will make your hair stand on end. He was rampantly racist. Now, in the end, he signed the laws he needed to sign, the Civil Rights Act of 64 and the Voting Rights Act of 65. But he was not any kind of paragon of racial harmony, quite the reverse. And there are people who think that he did the war on poverty deliberately to keep African Americans from continuing to enter the mainstream. It had that effect because it took the air out of the civil rights movement. Pretty quickly, it almost was beside the point. And then, of course, Dr. King was assassinated in 68. It's a tragedy. This is an epic, epic tragedy for this country because all the pathologies we've inflicted on the African-American community are inflicting us as well. It was in the 50s, something like 4% of American children grew up without a father, something like 4%. In among white people, it's now 25%. Among African Americans, it's 2/3, actually closer to 3/4. All of that came from the war on poverty directly, all of it, every bit of it. And the drug problem, you know, name a problem in this country, name a social problem, and every single one of them comes from what the war on poverty did to African American men, all of them.
So how do you change it?
As I said, the only thing that we can do is first, I think we have to stop teaching racism and come together and teach the kids that people have just, you know, sort of do a Texas kind of thing. Teach the children that people of all colors are all equally Americans. We're all equal and we're all American and we're all part of the same tribe. You can't teach that after the age of 5, so it's very important that parents decide that they want something better for their children than what we have now, and then they'll do it. They'll do meetups and things. And then the second thing that we do is we rear a precious first generation of fully emancipated African Americans. Once we do that, that will do a few things. Number one, besides, of course, ending the problem for all of these people, I mean, because right now we're going to raise another generation of people thrown away. How can we do that? That's unconscionable. But if they all get an elite education, and that is very doable in this country, we have the wealth to do it, we have the resources to do it, and we have I think enough people have the drive to do it, to get it done. But when we do that, these children will grow up, and it will be their birthright to be free. They will be part of the mainstream. They will have networked in school with the children of billionaires. And they will never have known what we now inflict on people who look like them. It'll all be over. It'll be over within 15 years, 20 at the outside, if we will just rear one fully emancipated generation of African Americans. And other things will flow from it. For example, I think you'll find that their elders will start also getting the sense maybe they can do more with their lives. And if we help them to enter the mainstream, we can end all of this, all of it. I mean, it doesn't have to go on this way.
And do you think, Roberta, that this same issue is also inflicted into other minorities here in the U.S.?
No. No.
Why not?
Because they were never enslaved here. if you watch carefully and you see interactions between people of different races, you find that people are comfortable with people who don't look like them. People, I mean, I live in a mixed neighborhood. Most people in Texas do, and everybody's comfortable around everybody else. But when you see black and white people together, they are nervous around one another. There's this grotesque thing still going on, which is simply the fact that we've never completed emancipation. So we are all, everybody is worried about saying the wrong thing. The very fact that this very dear friend of mine never told me all this till after we'd been close friends for 10 years, that tells you something, right? I didn't raise the issue except inadvertently because I was curious about something and I didn't even think of her as black when I asked it. And we will always be doing this uncomfortable dance until we end slavery in America. Definitively end it. Celebrate together the end of it. And we have the opportunity to do that, by the way. 2019 will be the 400th anniversary of black chattel slavery on this continent. I think we ought to come together as one nation and celebrate that year as our year of jubilee and say from now on this is all over. And for sure we've got to be educating those children so that we have an emancipated generation to begin this new America. Yeah, we can do it. I mean, I talk about all of this in the fun of living together. It won't even be hard to do. That's the thing about it. It'll feel so good to be doing the right thing. But what's being done now is perpetuating the horror because people are being demonized for being racist. People are not racist by nature. People are confused. Racism is a form of ignorance. The way you cure ignorance is with patient coaching and teaching and kindness and love. Love will solve this problem. There's nothing else that ever will. And Dr. King knew that. You never saw anybody angrier than he was, but he sure didn't use it because his anger was useless. And he knew that. His anger was counterproductive. So he turned it into a fire of love. And you could see that. Watch his videos. You can see the anger and the love mixed, but the love is always tops. He never, ever attacked people for racism. He gave them love and patience. That's the only thing we can do. So these people who are going around, Black Lives Matter, but the black lives that matter most of all are the children because we can rear them to have perfectly free and equal American lives if we will stop doing this demonizing of white people for things they didn't do. I mean, everybody who did this is dead now.
Mm-hmm.
And every white person who learns what's actually going on will feel the way I do. This will not stand. We're going to end this right away.
Well, it's with books like the one that you just wrote that, and with education and with people just wanting to end, that it's possible. It's just like you said, I do believe in the magic of your intention. So let's bring many people together with the intention of changing things right away.
Right away.
Yeah,
for the sake of those little ones, look at little boys. Look at a little 3-4-year-old African-American boy and realize that his future is in your hands. We have the power to give him a fully emancipated, wonderful American life, which is his heritage. He is an American citizen. Or if we don't do it, he will be another throwaway African-American man. Before he's 20, his life will be over. But his life is in our hands, that little child. What can we do? We've got to help him.
So, Roberta, if people want to get in touch with you or they want you to get your book, this book or any of the others that we have presented, what is the best way?
Well, of course, everybody's books are on Amazon. Our books are in some bookstores, but bookstores tend only to carry, you know, books that are just out or, you know, by famous authors or whatever. So the easiest way is Amazon. And RobertaGrimes.com, there's a contact block there. Anyone who wants to contact me can just send me an email through there. Make sure you give me your right email address because I have written some long answers only to find out the person hadn't entered their address correctly, so there was no way to get them the answer. but I do answer emails. It takes me a few days now. I used to be able to say, if you don't hear in 24 hours, send flowers, but I can't anymore because I get so many emails now.
And Roberta, I saw on your website that you have an event coming up with in September 15. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The Afterlife Research and Education Institute, of which I am thrilled to be a member of the board, is putting on its annual symposium in Scottsdale. And afterlifestudies.org is the website. So that one is full. We were oversubscribed at this point. But we'll be doing the same thing next year. We're going to get a bigger hotel this time. And we talk about, in this particular one, we talk about, of course, the afterlife and basic information about what, I mean, this isn't even a question. Of course, our lives are eternal, but we talk about how we know that and so on. We're also going to be talking about how to help people who are approaching death. We'll be talking about communication with the dead, which is a very big area and is going to become very much bigger soon because there are methods coming online that anybody can use. When you have an app on your phone that will let you call up Aunt Mildred and get her recipe, you'll stop thinking that you're going to die because, of course, she didn't either. And we talk about what we're calling the new spirituality, and this is part of that leg of this symposium, this whole notion of how do we solve our most intractable problems. I'll be giving, a symposium-wide talk on the fun of living together, I'll also be talking about the fun of growing forever, which is essentially how we make the most of our lives, because we now understand why we're here and what we're supposed to do. And there are easy ways to get the kind of growth that you need to get here in order to have a much better afterlife existence. We talk about all of that. And each year, though, we have different themes, so I'm not sure what they are going to be for next year, but they'll be the same vein. We have a lot of fun doing this.
And we love having you here and find out of information about this. And your books are so profound and change, always looking for change in our way we think, in our way we react, in a way we present our lives. So thank you for your words and your wisdom. And is there anything else that you would like to share with us before we say goodbye?
Well, the most important thing I'd like to say is we can fix this problem. Everybody will benefit, and the country will become infinitely stronger and healthier once we have fixed this problem. So my hope is that everyone will come together and try. It's what we're doing. We all know what we're doing now is not working at all, and in fact, it's making things worse. If we don't fix this problem, this country will not be a place we want to leave to our children and grandchildren. So the time to fix it is now, especially since it's going to be fun to do.
That's right. And it all takes us to say yes to change. So thank you for that. And thank you, everybody, for listening. And remember, share, and let us know your thoughts. And Roberta Grimes, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for writing and for bringing information down, and for everything that you do for the consciousness of the planet.
Thank you so much, dear. Bless you for what you do as well.
Thank you. And goodbye.